Well, despite my absolute terror of speaking in public, it's really good to be with you all tonight. I wanted to talk a little about a word that I've wrestled with in my practice. You could say it's a deceptive word. In Zen terms, you might even call it a delusion. It's a word, I think, that if we hold it the wrong way, can easily throw us off track. It certainly has for me. The word is enlightenment, to enlighten. Let the light in. Lighten the burden. Who wouldn't want that? But first, a word about the underside of enlightenment. It's opposite. The darken, engulf in darkness. In the middle of our life's journey, I found myself in a dark wood. This is Dante in the Inferno, setting forth on his comprehensive guided tour of the underworld, what we might call the psychologies of hell. I found myself in a dark wood. Well, who among us hasn't been there at one time or another? In that dark wood. What is the nature of this wood? Why do we find ourselves there? I think for a lot of us, it's about coming to what we might call an inflection point in our lives. A moment when, as Dante might put it, the velocities of youth are winding down. Discontent is creeping in. Dissatisfaction, disillusionment with ourselves, with our work, with our place in the world. Anybody been there? It's that moment when all of our great plans and ambitions, our grandiose fantasies about ourselves, hit up against reality. We wake up one day and it occurs to us that maybe we will not, in fact, be the next Steve Jobs, the next Picasso, the next Meryl Streep. In my own case, I began to wonder if I might, in fact, not be the next Rodney Dangerfield. I don't get no respect. It's at this point, it seems to me, that some of us find our way to a zendo. I think it's no accident, by the way, that you don't see many 18-year-olds practicing Zen. So what are we looking for when we walk in these doors? Well, if you're like me, you're looking for enlightenment. That's all. I thought, well, maybe I'll settle for being a fully realized, enlightened being. I may not be the next Daniel Day-Lewis, but maybe I could be, oh, I don't know, what? The next Joshua? Just kidding. But only up to a point. The point is that, like a lot of us, I brought to Zen all the fantasies that I brought to the rest of my life. So the question for me became not, what do I want from Zen? But what do I bring to Zen when I walk through these doors? We do not come empty-handed when we come to empty bowl Zendo. What baggage do we bring? What illusions? Our woundedness, our self-importance, our inner obstacles. I walked in here with a head full of ideas and a belly full of unconscious conditioning, like most of us. The ideas I got from books, I mean, the beautiful, gorgeous metaphysics of it, the vocabulary, emptiness, impermanence, interbeing, no self, went right to my head. Took up residence in the space that the existentialists had just moved out of. Looking back, I'd say I was kind of drunk on the ideas of Zen, not so much on the practice of Zazen, not so much on sitting. That I found excruciating. My aching back, my head spinning like a pinball machine. There were times I had an impulse to jump up and scream, I can't take this anymore. Does this ring a bell, or am I the only one who felt this that way? I craved enlightenment without a clue as to what that might be. I knew two things. I knew one, that I was completely unenlightened. And I knew that enlightenment must be out there somewhere, because I'd read all about it in books. People at a sesshin in Japan, breaking open, blinded by the light. Yeah, I'd like some of that. I figured that if I just sat long enough and worked hard enough, I'd get there sooner or later. Preferably sooner. A lightning strike, maybe. But early on, I learned something important about myself. I learned that I would do anything, I mean anything. Compulsive remembering, rehearsing conversations, rehearsing lines, anything. Anything to avoid being right here, right now. Just avoid, escape. In my case, escape to the point of choosing a career where I could pretend to be other people. At the householder Sushin, Roshi spoke about sitting with uncertainty, which is to say, sitting with life just as it is, right this minute. For me, coming from a situation where the roof could fall in any minute, and did, sometimes several times a day, uncertainty was about the last thing I could handle. I wanted control. When you come from helplessness, all you want is control. I've come to think of our unconscious conditioning as like living inside a suit of armor. Because we're largely unaware of it, the armor is maybe invisible, but it is there. It is rigid. It may not expand as we grow up. For some of us, the armor is so thick that we can spend years, even a lifetime, encased inside it, seeing without ever really seeing, hearing without hearing. I heard everything that was said in the Zendo without ever really hearing it. I understood the teaching. I understood it. I just could not grasp it. Well, after a while, I thought, well, I'm making no progress here. It's a shin. I'd have glimpses of what they call Kensho. For a few seconds, everything just flowing together. Very fleeting. But my life did not change in any meaningful way. I felt no sense of being enlightened. So after a while, I just gave up. I threw out all the ideas. After that, what kept me going was a sense that at least when I sat regularly, my life just seemed to work better. Couldn't tell you why. As someone who was always rushing ahead of himself, maybe sitting just slowed me down a little. Of all the books I'd read, one piece stuck in my mind. I think it was Shunryu Suzuki, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. I seem to remember him saying that enlightenment was simply the act of practicing Zazen itself. The act of practicing Zazen. What? That is enlightenment? Are you kidding me? My back, my spinning head, my desperate need to escape, that is enlightenment? No, couldn't be. I didn't believe it. But of course, the universe works in mysterious ways. Maybe it doesn't tap us on the shoulder until we're ready to be tapped. When we least expect it. Sensei Michel said something a few weeks ago. I don't remember what. I really don't. It's gone. It's just in one ear and out the other. But suddenly something just clicked for me. It felt like something I had always known, but had never really grasped. That the story of my life, my whole victim story, had all the reality of a dream. A story I'd made up. How do I put words to this? It's not as if the past had disappeared, but that the story I told about myself about it was just that, a story, a scrap of paper. Stanley Kunitz puts it this way, at the core of one's existence is a pool of energy that has nothing to do with personal identity. But that falls away from self, blends into the natural universe, end quote. What he's saying, and we've heard it here in this Zendo 100 times, is that we are not a separate self. We are, in fact, the universe. This was not an insight, if you want to call it that, that I had expected. It was not a eureka moment. No blinding light. I felt enlightened only in the sense that for a few minutes, a burden seemed lift. No drama. Just this, right now. It was like looking at that drawing of a wizened old crone. You look and you look and you look, and all you see are the warts and the wrinkles. And then you look again, and there's a very subtle shift in seeing. And suddenly, there she is, the beautiful young woman who was there all along. Hidden in plain sight. I have not felt all that different since that shift in seeing. I do not think of myself as an enlightened being. I can still wallow in self-pity with the best of them. But what I had, I think, and maybe this is the word, was a kind of opening, a letting in of light, fresh air. And it seems to me that if we can see it once, this opening will always be available to us. We can summon it through our practice. So getting back to Suzuki, I think now I'm kind of getting what he was getting at. He was saying that enlightenment is not a state of being. It's a process. It is the process in Zazen of bringing ourselves back over and over and over again. Back to this present moment, this breath, back from our fantasies, back to life, just as it is right now. Now, if you're like me, you might say, well, I don't like this moment, just as it is right now. I hate this moment. I want to escape this moment. For me, as for many of us, I think this is the voice of trauma speaking, a voice we have to acknowledge and address. For myself, I found that psychotherapy was a good place to start working on that. But again, the work we're doing here is about bringing ourselves fully alive back to this present moment. Where else could we be alive? The future is a fantasy. And in a certain extent, a certain sense, so is the past. I recently watched a movie from my childhood, a swashbuckler called Scaramouche, starring Stuart Granger. In the climactic scene, the hero is on stage, disguised as the Commedia dell'arte character Scaramouche. And he sees his archenemy up in the balcony. Mel Ferrer in a powdered wig and a smirk. Deadly swordsman. So our hero grabs a rope and swings up to the balcony, confronts his enemy with this line that has been branded on my brain since I was 9 years old. Perhaps you're afraid of Scaramouche, but I do not think you will be afraid of, whips off his mask, Andre Moreau. Except that was not the line at all. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. I thought they must have reshot that scene. I mean, this line has been in my brain since I was 9. Now, this is a silly example, but I think it says something about the way we hold the past. I saw that movie when I was 9 years old. So something happened. But the way my brain remembered it was completely unreliable. It was a fantasy. The question I keep coming back to in my sitting and in my life is, where are you? Are you here? Are you fully present? Walking the dog, are your feet on the ground? Are you breathing the air? You smell the grass? You feel the presence of the trees? I think for me, this is the enlightenment that I know. A lightening of the burden. In my line of work, we talk about making character choices, making the right choice, making the interesting choice, the original choice. I've found that when I'm really fully in the moment, right now, it makes no difference what choice I make. When you're free to go in any direction, you can't go wrong. Every choice is the right choice. I don't play golf, but I can imagine what it feels like to hit a perfect towering drive off the tee. The ball soars high, high, high up in the air, arcs downward, plunks down on the green, and rolls in the cup. Now, it seems to me you have to be totally in flow with the universe at that moment to make that shot. I think that in the moment of that swing, you've really stopped time. You are the universe. I'll give the last word, the great Stanley Kunitz. This is from The Long Boat. When his boat snapped loose from its mooring under the squeaking of the gulls, he tried at first to wave to his dear ones on shore. But in the rolling fog, they had already lost their faces. Too tired even to choose between jumping and calling, somehow he felt absolved and free of his burden. Those mottos stamped on his name tag, conscience, ambition, and all that caring. He was content to lie down in the slop of his cradle, buffeted by the storm, endlessly drifting, Peace. Peace. To be rocked by the infinite.